myself again. But it's the only way you're ever gonna learn. You look back and it's all in the past. Good evening and welcome to NUFC Matters with me, Steve Wraith. It is Wednesday night, which means it's retro night, and I'm joined by George, by Steve, by Mitch and Stu as we look back at matches between Newcastle United and Barnsley Football Club. So, as always, plenty of stories from the guys about games that they've either been to or remember quite clearly, or maybe not so clearly in the case of Stu Penman. And we also look at players that played for both teams. And we also look at the celebrity fans, and there's quite a shortage of celebrity Barnsley fans, I've got to be honest, especially after a lot of in-depth research that I did yesterday. But without further ado, welcome back, lads. We had a little sabbatical because Steve Wilkinson was off, and then we've lost Steve Hastie today. He's in a much-needed rest. So have a nice night off, Steve. We'll look forward to pre-recording the Fab Four with you tomorrow. Hope you feel a little bit better. But as always, we will start with George. Your first memory of Newcastle Barnsley, George.
Well, it may be familiar to some of you, but anyway, here goes. My first recollection of Barnsley was the very first match I went to, and I was 4 years of age. And I've got to thank the two uncles, Tom and John, for getting me there, because my dad was still in the RAF. They'd been trying to get us to the match before then. As soon as I started to walk, they wanted to take us to the match. Of course, my mother and my granny wouldn't let them do that. And of course, my grandfather just kind of did what my grandmother said. So he was against them as well. But they managed to set up a rumour about this match. This was the first leg of the FA Cup between Newcastle and Barnsley. Now, somebody in the FA had a bright idea that if it was two legs, they would make more money. It was fine until the first draw came, and then there was a hoo-ha about, well, was the replay going to be two legs, or was it going to be a neutral ground like it used to be? And typical FA, it was a right schmozzle, there's no doubt about that. Anyway, how the two uncles managed to persuade my mother to let me go to this match January, and I was only four in December, and they'd set about a route. There was rumours at that time, because we're still playing wartime football, remember, and there was a rumour going around that Stanley Matthew, who was in the RAF for a while, was stationed on the military road at Ousburn at the RAF station there by the lakes, and that he was going to be allowed to come out and play either for us or Barnsley at St James's Park. And that was the rumour that was going around, which they perpetuated, and they did it deliberately because my grandfather, Brian, my mother's father, was from, guess where, Hanley in Stoke, where Matthews was born. He was a hero. So there was a chance of him seeing Stanley Matthews. He wanted to see us go at the match as well. So that's how they persuaded me to let us go at that age. They made us a special contraption that could either be hooked on the crash barrier in front of them for me to stand or sit on, or it had prongs on the bottom so they could jam it over the short wall, the small wall around the cinder track that used to be at St James's Park. So they could sit us on the wall. They decided that the stickers on the wall, the two kids, I understand either side of us, were given strict instructions that if I fell off and hurt myself, that we'd get knocked off the two uncles. So they kept all of us tight throughout the game. And it was an interesting game, so I'm told, because I can't remember much of it, that we won 4-2. And The other interesting thing was, of course, is that I celebrated all the goals, not just the four Newcastle goals, but the two Barnsley goals as well. Apparently, I'd been drummed into us that you celebrate goals. Well, that's what I did. I celebrated all the goals. It's a good game, and there's some characters in the team. I mean, Garbutt was the goalkeeper. It was another goalkeeper who... I have to say, in the old tradition, looked as though he'd eaten all the pies. Bobby Cowell was starting to make an impression in the team. And the left back was Benny Craig, somebody who I got to know 10, 11, 12 years later when I started to go to the club as a schoolboy, because Benny was the coach that I was responsible to. Now, Benny Craig and his oppo, Joe Richardson, who was one of the other coaches, when they played fullback together in the championship, a lot of people thought they should have played for England. Indeed, a lot of people thought that if it hadn't been for the war, they would have played for England. Joe Harvey was in the team. Todd Smith, a local centre-half from Wall's End. Charlie Crow was coming into the team. And then a young man called Jackie Milburn was playing on the right wing. And in the centre of the attack, we had Roy Bentley, who was another good centre-forward, who eventually went to Chelsea and played for England. And Albert Stubbins, who went to Liverpool and played for England. Imagine the competition for the centre-piece. No, that's the next match, Steve.
All right. I haven't checked it, to be honest, George. It's such small writing, I couldn't make out what it was.
And then Ernie Taylor was playing in midfield as well. And another character called Hare at outside left, who was a very talented player. Milburn scored the first goal. Stubbins scored the next two. And then Bentley scored the fourth one. And we beat Burnley 4-2. Now, typical of Newcastle, we went away the next week to play the second leg, and guess what? Lost it 3-0. So we got out of the cup. And knocked out of the cup by Barnsley on that occasion. But a great thrill, and I don't remember much of it. I was only 4 years old, for goodness sake. But it was a great thrill and something which clearly sticks in the annals of our family, that the two uncles took us to the match when I was 4 years of age, and talked about nothing else for the next month, apparently. But it was great and a good memory, and one which is my really first introduction to Barnsley in football.
Brilliant stuff, George, as always. Okay, Steve, welcome back. Did you have a good holiday?
Yes, nice break. I'm sure how important I am that you actually cancel the show when I'm off. But I managed
not
to watch
just once, twice.
Oh, well, you would have. I managed to watch Denmark England when I was away. So just in the hotel bedroom, though, it wasn't anything flashy. So at least I saw the game. But
very good.
But great to be back. And eventually we'll get Barnsley, because we were going to do it a while ago when we did a tribute to Glenn Rona instead. So I think some of the research for Barnsley was done a while ago before they change. But my first game, and it follows on in some ways from George's, has been quite a few firsts in this game. And the first, very much in line with George's, it was the first game of my godson, Robbie, who was 7 at the time, and it was his first match. And it was a victory in 1993, April 1993, when we won 6-0. So not a bad start for your first game. I think you probably thought things were going to be like that forever. But things were pretty good for the next few years anyway under Keegan. I think the crowd was low that time, because if you remember, the work was getting done on the Leasers end, and the new stand was getting built. So the capacity was only about 30,000. So there was about 29,000 in there. And I think what had actually happened is we had quite a few family tickets. And I think probably my dad or somebody couldn't go, and Robbie and his dad could go at the match. So it was a good game for him to see. And we got off to a great start. And quite a few were the first, actually, in the match itself. If you remember in those days, the transfer deadline, it wasn't like now where you've got the window finishing at the end of August and in January. You used to be able to sign players right up till usually about the middle of March. So you could sign any time during the season. And the team that we sort of put together was ready to go into the Premier League, where we're pretty certain that we're going up at that stage. And some reinforcements came in March. Two in particular, Andy Cole, paid for 175,000 from Bristol City. And Scott Sellers was amongst the other players. And actually, they both scored in this game. But the game started with a hat-trick from Andy Cole. The first three goals were scored by him. And it was what you call a perfect hat-trick, if anybody knows a perfect hat-trick. The first goal was a pass from Barry Venison, who was playing right back. It was it felt to Andy Cole, and he did. He very fast dribbling and control that he used to have in the box. You might remember that was a very one of his qualities, that his speed and his close control, and he rifled in with his left foot into the bottom corner. Just before half time, second goal again, a pass through into Andy Cole inside the box. He laid it out to Gary Kelly, who was on the, just outside the box on the right side. Perfect chip from him, and Andy Cole went into the just inside the penalty into the 6 yard box and headed in to make it 2-0 half time. And some of the passing that was going on was fantastic. The, you know, it was very much a party atmosphere, and things were looking good, and were the flow and the fast paced attacking, counter attacking. You know, we see the counter attacking now, but this was all fast paced, and it was really a style of Keegan's play that went on for years to come. Straight up to half time, went 3-0 up, and it was Andy Cole's third goal. This time across from the left hand side, the right wing from Rob Lee. Andy took it down just inside the, but it was 8 yards out, swiveled and stuck it in with his right foot. So completing the perfect hat trick, his first hat trick for the club, and was many more. I can't remember how many, but he obviously got another one that season. In the final game against Leicester, and went on to score 12 goals in the 12 games that he played up to the end of that season. So we're really looking forward to what he was going to do in the Premier League, and he certainly didn't let us down, as we well remember. The game finished, though. The next goal, I think, was probably the best goal of the game, and it was from Lee Clark, who at that stage was in his playing his best football, and I think he always linked well with Andy Cole. But this time was a solo goal from him, made from a clearance from the back, pass forward from, I can't remember who it was, put the ball forward. And I think it was Steve Howie picked it up just outside the area. Lee Clark picked it up just inside the Barnsley half, sped away, very close control, just got it just outside the penalty area. He used to be called Jigsaw, if you remember. So he managed to remember that and not get into the penalty area. So he shot in left foot just outside the box, 4-0. The fifth goal was... one scored by it was actually another first, because it also at the beginning of the season when we had managed to avoid that dreaded relegation that we've talked about in the past with a game against Leicester. We've featured that quite often. Keegan reinforced the team, and when one of the signings then was John Beresford, who nearly went to Liverpool, but he decided to come to Newcastle instead. From Portsmouth, and you know, he was a great player over the year, but he started to play well, and actually we got a penalty from Lee, got brought down inside the penalty area, and the game was 1-4-0 at this stage. So they gave it to John Beresford, who slotted his first goal for Newcastle, and he scored some other memorable ones. I remember two particularly in the Champions League when we played in that, when he scored a couple of goals away to Kiev. And then they finished the game off. Another first, this time across from the left wing, this time from David Kelly. And Scott Sellers stole inside the box to volley in from just about 6 or 7 yards out. Make it 6-0. Great victory just to cement the fact that we're on our way up to the Premier League. And a very memorable day for all of us. And particularly my godson, Robbie, on his first game. So that's my first match.
Great stuff. Good recollections. And on to you, Neil. Good evening.
Evening. How are you doing?
Very good, mate. Very good. I thought you were channeling your inner Ray Winston tonight, but I see you've opted for a casual
Went with a T-shirt in the end, aye. Yeah.
Very good. Hope you're enjoying your holiday, mate. Give us your first Barnsley story.
Not bad. 15 floors up on a hotel on the Palm. It's quite pleasant, really.
Nice.
First Barnsley recollections. It's the 1989-90 season, the 3rd of March. And at the time, we were sort of still coming back into the playoff positions. But I think we were in the middle of something like a 6 or 7 game unbeaten run. Barnsley at the time were second bottom. They were awful. And unlike, whenever I think of Barnsley come to Newcastle, I always think of a team that wants to fight. And this was a Barnsley team that just didn't. It came with a white flag. After about 12 minutes, another rare goal from John Anderson. Corner had come in and it ping-ponged around the box and he was there to volley it in. And I think Ando only scores volleys. I think if you look at all of his goals, They're all screamers from somewhere from 20 to 8 yards in, and they're all absolute pearlers of volleys. And that was one of them. Second goal came about 10 minutes later. Kevin Scott headed home. Brockett played a corner across, and the ball sort of again come out wide to Roy Aiken, who played a lovely 1-2 with Kevin Dillon. And the cross was just there to be put in, and that's what Scott, because he'd stayed up from the corner, duly did. And the thing I realised about this team that eventually didn't go up in the playoffs was when they played good football, they really played good football. You know, when I've been doing researching for this show, and you look at the games on YouTube, by God, when these put passes together, they really did. And again, another fantastic goal on the half hour. Mark McGee played a wonderful ball to split the defence, and to carry on with the theme of firsts, it was Roy Aiken's first goal with an absolutely beautiful finish under the keeper. And then typical Newcastle, just when everything looks easy, we make it hard for ourselves by giving a goal away out of nothing to Barnsley. Just before the half time, a certain follicularly challenged Steve Agnew, if anybody knows that name, got one back out of nothing. He picked the ball up in the midfield after an errant pass and slotted it home. The second half was actually all about John Gallagher. Come on, as a substitute at half time for Wayne Ferraday. And you know, when a player does everything but score, poor lad should have had a hat trick. He hit the post, he hit the bar, played magnificently. And the fourth came actually after a run from him, and he put the ball into the box. And Paul Futcher, again, another very long associated name with Barnsley, I think everybody would know. Did a handball, that would have been a great save. And these days would have accompanied with a red card. At the time, it just accompanied with a wag of the finger off the referee, if I remember right. Mark McGee wrapped it up 4-1, and then it was just the last half hour of the game was all about John Gallagher trying his best to score and not succeeding. Well, that's my first game. Again, like I say, that team, the more I've researched for this show, the more frustrated I've got about that season that ended up with playoff defeat. You know, it could have done so much more, so frustrating.
Yeah, one of those frustrating seasons, certainly, and typical of Newcastle's luck. Something that just gets invented, the playoffs, and Newcastle end up being the victim of it in rather unfair circumstances. But Stu, over to you for your first Barnsley story.
Well, the first game I'm choosing is the reverse fixture from what Steve Wilkinson was talking about, which is, I think Mark Byers has just mentioned in the chat there, was the 1-0 defeat away in the 92-93 season. And It was on the 13th of December, so it was just before Christmas. Newcastle were walking away with the league, and they were playing the best football, I would say, apart from maybe anyone who was under 40, I would say, at that time. They were playing the best football Newcastle had played from any supporter they'd ever seen. And then I reckon if you looked up free-flowing football in the dictionary, there was a picture of that squad there, you know, with the Bracewells, the Venisons, and, you know, later to come Andy Cole, but at this stage he wasn't playing. The crowd that day was 13,000, and I'm not exaggerating when at least half of it was Newcastle fans. And that's what happens when, I mean, we've got a great following anyway, but when we've got a sniff of a bit of a glory, you know, it's the whole city gets captivated with it. And I remember that Barnsley were opening a new stand, or they hadn't opened it just yet, so it looked really strange. Everyone crammed into like one end, and this brand new spanking stand that was sitting empty. But the reason I chose this game was more for the story than the result. Obviously, with us getting beat 1-0. Now, at the time, I was doing the A-levels, and I was working in the bakery to supplement it. And the four of us went down in a car. Now, for those who used to travel to the games away in the 80s and 90s, you'll remember a coach company from Crabnaughton called Snaith Travels. I don't know if anyone remembers that. Well, Alan Snaith was the nephew of the owner of Snaith's Travels, and he worked in the bakery with us. And he used to look, well, I'm sure he still does, but he looked like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. So his nickname was Shaggy. But he was a designated driver because we decided it was in the family and he should be the driver. So we're in work early on the Sunday morning. When I say early, I mean like 3 o'clock in the morning to get all the graft done. And then by 9 o'clock, we've piled into his car. There was four of us. There was obviously Snaithy was driving. And I kid you not, the name of the one in the shotgun, the proper really nice bloke, is a lad by the name of Mick Warburton. Now, can you believe that with him being a baker? You know, that was actually his name. This is before Warburton's bread has become popular and everything else. Nothing to do with him, unfortunately. So I was being the young, and I was told to sit in the back. And my co-passenger was Decker the Nutter. And he is a nutter by no stretch of imagination. Proper top nice man, but he's if we keep the bakery jokes going, you know, he's a few rolls short of the trade sort of thing. A few slices short of a loaf. But nice with it, if you can be such a thing. So we're going down. We left at 9 o'clock in the morning, and the cans were open. We're all drinking. Shaggy's not happy because we're all enjoying ourselves and, you know, drinking away. Now, for those who've been to Barnsley away, where the away fans parked, or if you where the team buses or the buses used to park, was behind where the away end was. But behind that, there was a big embankment, which led up to like a hospital car park or a college car park or something. So we managed to park there. And just as we're getting out of the car, the teams have come out. And, you know, you can hear the Newcastle fans and, you know, you just want to get in there as soon as you can. So without any thought of it, we've all started running down this hill without realising that once you get to the bottom of the hill, all these coaches are parked there and they're parked pretty tight to each other. And there was probably space for 1.5 people. Now, Snaithy being the Shaggy lookalike, he was quite safe. You know, he's thin enough, he'll get through, no problem. And he had the longer legs and he was in the front of the queue, which left three of us behind him. And as we're trying to funnel into this, and you can't stop yourself. You know, once you start going down a gradient like that, you can't stop yourself. Well, unfortunately for me, I was on the left-hand side and I'm trying to squeeze through and my wrist has just hit the side of this coach and you could hear a crack. But I knew I'd snap my wrist. Like. And so when Newcastle, everyone's cheering and my hand was just flopping like that, you know, and the pain. But thankfully, the amount of alcohol we had on the way down had numbed it temporarily. So with the game itself, we end up getting beat 1-0, sloppy defending a goal. It was like no one wanted to defend it. It was just after half-time. But, you know, it was one of those games you go and I can't remember how many points clear we are. We knew we were getting promoted and you're going to have hiccups. You can't win every game, et cetera, et cetera. But most fans took it. The atmosphere was brilliant. You know, all the old songs that we're all familiar with were getting sung. And then we get back in the car on the way up. And I'm sitting in the back smoking. And now Snaith travels the electric window on his car, his brand new car, he's bragging about with his electric windows. It decided not to break, not to work. So it was stuck halfway down. So the Decker the Nutter had this, I wouldn't say a nervous disposition, I would say a psychotic disposition, where when he talks to you, he's got to like thump your leg or thump you. And I'm sitting on the side of him, and where he kept hitting us, it was where my broken wrist was. At the time, I didn't know it was broken, but I knew it was sore. And I was like, Derek, you're going to have to stop this, man. He's like, well, put your window up. I'm dumbing the conversation down, obviously. And I said, I can't put the window up, because it's broken. And he kept trying to jump over us to put this window up, like looking for the thing that winds it up. And I said, there's no, it's an electric window. So it was quite a very cold trip back. Quite a tense trip back. We'd run out of cans and I got dropped off at the RVI and ended up getting home a lot later than I should have done. So I'm getting accused of where you've been, who you've been with, which pub have you been in, and I've got my wrist in plaster, and that was me for Christmas with a broken wrist in plaster. So happy days, I suppose, if you look back, there were happy days now, but not at the time, you know, it was a bit, but that was my first experience of Barnsley, just this embankment. And the next game I talk about, I was still in fear of it. Thankfully, we didn't have to witness it because I made the heat park far away from it. But I was pretty scared of this hill because I just knew that it was the first time when you can hear a bone break as well. It just snapped. There's nothing you can do about it. But I wasn't missing the game. I didn't have to research two games because they both of them stick out in memory for that reason. The next game, I'll explain. But the way I did look at the game on YouTube to try and remember the goal, and what I seen, as I mentioned before, with the crowd being empty on one side, and how packed it was behind the ground, I think I missed maybe one away game all season that year. So that was the season we were getting promoted, and the world was good with Newcastle United.
I came away from that same game whinging that I'd ruined a new pair of campers on that very bank. I don't feel so bad now.
Brilliant stuff. I think everybody remembers the bank. I think everybody remembers the bank that we were on back in the day down at Barnsley, and it's ruined many a pair of good trainers. Big shout out to our sponsors, as always, Spider VPN, who've been with us for quite a few months now. For all your internet security, simply Google Spider VPN, and they are the boys to trust. They can help you with your protecting your passwords, protecting everything on your computer. So Google Spider VPN, and they will be at the top of that Google search list. Also, a big thank you to skipsandbins.com. Telephone 0800 25 45 25 3. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com. Website www.skipsandbins.com. Easy contract free and pay as you go waste collection. Big thanks to them as well. And to qtechshop.co.uk, the makers of pool tables and snooker tables in Wall's End, Newcastle. And also the people who run our website, nufcmatters.com. A big shout out to John for launching his new brands as well, just for the summer. London Calling t-shirts, which include Rob Lee and Sir Les Ferdinand. And, of course, the Over the Wall t-shirt with Ryan Taylor. £15 for your t-shirt, plus package and postage. Also got a Saturday's Kids t-shirt with the likes of Steve Howie, Lee Clark and Steve Watson on. Something a little bit different for those summer nights ahead. And also big thanks to John at Jab Signature for making all of our flyers. Don't forget that the match day bucket is still in operation throughout the summer, raising money for the food bank, nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk. Simply drop some money into the bucket virtually, and you will go into the raffle to win the watch. And this is a one-off watch which has been donated by John from Q-Tech, who is running the pool night on the 6th of August, a 24-hour charity pool night in aid of the food bank at Spotlight in Newcastle. I'm sure Steve Hasty will give us an update on Friday's Fab Four about that, with that date creeping ever sooner. And don't forget, I am back tomorrow night, 6 o'clock till 7. Super Mac and Gibble will join me as we look back on the last 7 days at Newcastle United. And if you are a first-time visitor to the channel, please subscribe. 100 more subscribers we've had this week, so big thank you so far. Click the Newcastle Legends logo in the bottom right-hand corner, and that's it, you subscribe for free. 7 nights a week, we give free content all about Newcastle United, usually some other documentaries and interviews on the channel as well. Hit the thumb up to like the video tonight, that does us a big favour. Click share it to your social media, and drop into the comments box if you want to ask a question on screen, or just simply chat with like-minded Newcastle fans. Okay, George, back to you, and I have two photographs primed and ready, George.
Yeah, okay. There's a long preamble to the next to my second match.
And why change the habit of a lifetime for this show, George?
And it goes back to school days. Can you put the photograph up first, Steve, please?
Yep, go on. I presume it's the one of the team, George.
Yes, yes.
Okay, bear with us. Here we go.
Now, that's the Northumberland team that played the Yorkshire at Blythe Spartans in 1957. And you remember I told you about going to Burnley with Charlie Ferguson? Well, people wondered why Burnley had so many Geordies. Well, this photograph gives you a good example. On the left of the photograph, people should recognise Cess Irwin, who went on to play many years for Sunderland. And then Brian Johnson's next to him, a Newcastle boy. Jimmy Richardson. Now, Jimmy Richardson used to be called, his nickname amongst the kids was Chinky Richardson. His mother hated it. He hated it. I mean, he wasn't even Chinese, but Chinky Richardson was his nickname. Well, he went to Burnley as well. I went to Burnley. Tommy Spratt in the suit, he went to Burnley. Stuart Buchanan sorry, a young from West Tyne, and at the other end, the other winger was from West Tyne. They both went to Burnley and stored at Stuart Buchanan. So you can manage out of that lot, just that lot there. Burnley were taking this lot and take them away for weeks, sometimes longer than that, to try and persuade them to join the club. Tommy Spratt is in his suit because during the first half of this match, Tommy Spratt's father signed him up for Manchester United, who sent assistant manager Jimmy Murphy, Matt Busby's assistant manager Jimmy Murphy, to Blyth to sign Tommy Spratt. And that was and insisted at half time that Tommy came off. That's the Blyth Spartans' first team strips that were allowed to wear. And it was quite a thrill for most of the lads. However, can we go to the programme now, Steve, please? Now, that's the two teams on the programme. But if you look closely in the Yorkshire team, there are lots of lads from Barnsley, four or five from in Yorkshire. Well, Barnsley was the schoolboy team of that era. They used to win the school shield nearly every year. In fact, they won the school shield this particular year. And three of them, Brooks, Eric Brooks, and Harvey, and Bristow, the other Barnsley lad, they all turned up at Burnley as well when we were all there. And when we played this game, it was like a get-together of ex-Burnley holidaymakers. You know, we all knew each other, in the fact that we're playing in this team, because we've met each other in Burnley. Now, I got on well with Brookie because I roomed with him at Burnley, and he was a remarkable footballer. He was in the England team, as was the centre-half of Yorkshire, Tom Wood. And Brookie was only 14. He was a year behind us. You know the stupid issue about ages for school, if you're born in August, September, etc. Well, if Brookie'd stayed at school, he could have another full year in the Yorkshire team and another full year in the England team. Anyway, I got to know Brookie quite well. And he was supposedly going off to Leeds with Wood, and they were going to be stars of the future at Leeds. Don't know what happened to Wood, but Brookie decided to change his mind. He and his father thought he would stick with his local team, Barnsley, because he'd have a much better chance of getting first-team football. And how right they were, because just about a year after this schoolboy game, Brookie was the left-back in the Barnsley first team, made his debut when he was just barely 16. And that is, I think he's still the youngest player ever to play for Barnsley. So when we're doing Barnsley, I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if I can find a match between Newcastle and Barnsley that Brookie played in? Well, could I hell. Sorry to swear, but could I hell. Because there was most of his career we were in different divisions. So I even looked for a match with Sunderland that he might have played in, but I couldn't even find one of them. So I'm afraid me idea of getting Brookie involved in a match with Newcastle United, for my memory's sake, was impossible. So I had to give that one a miss. So I turned to the League Cup second leg in September 1994 at St James's Park. So, thanks, Steve. That's the end of the photographs. I did say it was quite the preamble, but but I was determined to find a match that Brookie was in. And we're just in different divisions the whole bloody time. Couldn't find them. Anyway, not even a Sunderland match. So I went to the League Cup second leg, 21st of September 1994. Won the first leg 1-0. And the Barnsley team that night, that way it was a Wednesday night, actually gave a good game. It was first 20 minutes, you'd think they were the home team. And I mean, our team was no slouches. I mean, this is our team. Pav, Hottinger, Beresford, Peacock, Howie, Albert, Sellers, Lee, Fox, Cole and Beardsley, with Watson and Matthew as the subs. I mean, that team should have walked across Barnsley, but they didn't. Barnsley were very, very well organised. And, of course, that Barnsley, our manager was KK, of course, But Barnsley manager was Dave Wilson, who was a player manager. And he obviously had done a lot of work at organising them how to combat Newcastle's play. And lo and behold, in 20 minutes, they went one up. And guess who scored the goal? Neil Redfern, of course, who became part one of our coaching staff many years later. And they held on, but gradually Newcastle wore them down. And Andy Cole scored the equaliser about 10 minutes later. And then just after half-time, Roel Fox scored one of the best goals I've seen him score for Newcastle. He ran the length of the field almost and slotted the ball past the goalkeeper. But the other thing I remember about this game is that the man that actually made the difference and got us organised and ran the game for most of it was Scott Sellers. It was a Scott Sellers treat. He was his left foot just orchestrated the whole team. Long passes, short passes, free kicks. He was nearly on target every time he took a kick. But most of all, he controlled the way Newcastle played. Having said that, Barnsley, you know, we should have walked over Barnsley. They weren't all slouches. I mean, their goalkeeper was Dave Watson, who was well known. And their back three was Glyn Snowden, who was a top man with Leeds for a while. Danny Wilson himself, the player manager, and Neil Redfern. And, of course, Andy Payton, who was well known in various leagues as a hard worker and good striker. But they gave us a hard game, but we won 2-1, and the crowd was just over 30,000. But it was interesting that, as I say, when you look at that team of ours, it should have been a foregone conclusion. Well, it wasn't. Barnsley really did give a tough time, and a big part of that was their organisation mostly. And Neil Redfern was no slouch either. He kept on with tours, and it was no surprise when he got their goal. So that's my second recollection against Barnsley, 2-1 win in the League Cup, second leg.
Great stuff. Steve Wilkinson, on to you for your second.
Yeah, well, I'm coming pretty much up to date. And the last time we played Barnsley, which was the last game of the season in 2016-17, when we ended up as champions, game mentioned a couple of times on the comments by, I think, James Brown, Mark Patterson, saying it was one of their most memorable games. A memorable game, yes, we had already guaranteed promotion, but it was looking as though we weren't going to go up as champions because we'd messed up a few of the games, and it was in Brighton's hands to clinch the title away to Aston Villa on that day. And early on in that game, if you might remember, they got a penalty, Glenn Murray put them 1-0 ahead, and if they had to win, if we won, so it was looking, and we played well that day. Initially, the first goal was a nice sort of flick in from Ayoze Perez from a cross on the right, and the second goal was from Ambemba in the second half. A shot from I think it was Perez again had a shot, and the keeper parried it, felt the chance for Ambemba, and he cracked it in. And then right up to the last minute, long punt up from Robbie Elliott, who was in goal. Flicked on by Mitrovic and Dwight Gayle scored. Interesting looking at that team for that day. There's not many of them left, despite the fact that we have it's only a few years. But the only players left that played that day, the go through the team, Robbie Elliott was in goal. Yedlin was playing. Isaac Hayden, who's still here, obviously. Mbemba, Paul Dummett still here. Atsu, borderline whether he's still here or not. Some guy called Shelby. Jack Colbert was gone now.
He's not here.
Hasn't been here for a couple of years, has he? Jack Colbeck, who's gone now, Gouffran, and Perez obviously went, and Mitrovic. So there's not many. When Dwight Gayle came on a sub, so the squad has changed quite a lot. But I think even that lot would have been probably better than some of the things we've had recently. But so we're winning 3-0. Not long left in the game, and it was looking as though it was kind of after the Lord Mayor's show. It was a party atmosphere there, but it was still looking as though we're going to go up in second place when the crowd just erupted, if you might remember, and it was just instant that the celebrations, you could just, it spread around the ground, and it's one of the memorable things is that the news came through that Jack Grealish had equalised down at the Villa game against Brighton, and we're going up as champions, and it was just instantly a celebration, and it's the most memorable thing that you can have of that game which were played well in the game. Of course, that they were a comfortable victory, but it really just came to light in those last few seconds when we found that we were going up as champions. So that's my second game. Sadly, we didn't build on that for all the reasons that we know. And Rafa now is moved on to pastures new. Watch this space.
I actually think I lifted Hasty off his feet when we heard about the equaliser.
Stu and I watched that game in Dubai in Goodfellas, and a little crowd were in there, and we got an update on the telly what had happened in Brighton, and we just went mental. And it was a relatively quiet Sunday afternoon, and there's a lads in there just having a quiet pint, a couple of lads playing pool, and I think we scared them all out. You know, it just went absolutely nuts.
Mish had mentioned it on a previous show. That's when that Nick from Brighton, who had the 500 bet with him, he was giving it all. The Barry McGuigan all game, wasn't he? And then Jack Grealish scored the equaliser. He left, put his money in the bar and left.
Aye.
Over to you, the Mish, for your next memory.
Okay, my next one is it's an FA Cup tie from March 1998, a quarter final in the run that got to the final against Arsenal that we ultimately lost. Some games are what you would call bad tempered. This game was just niggly, horribly, horribly niggly. It actually ended up with 9 yellows and a red card in it. And yet you couldn't say it was a horrible game or a fighting game. It was just niggly. Barnsley had come and set themselves up. They set themselves up 5 at the back, and the idea was they were going to leave their foot in it with everything. However, they also picked a team that had people in who could look after themselves. You had Shearer, you had Ketsvaya, you had Warren Barton. You know, everybody looks at Warren Barton now, you know, the articulate US television co-commentator, stroke analyst, always in his suit and looking dapper and speaking well. Yet you remember he came out the Crazy Gang dressing room, you know, and he didn't just come out the Crazy Gang dressing room putting frogs in people's shoes and cutting their suits up. He came out of it as the most expensive fullback in Britain at one point, you know, and he knew how to look after himself as well. And there was others in that team too. And it was Barnsley's attempt to try and level the game. There was no doubt about that. They were coming as big underdogs in a cup quarter final. I think they wanted to take it back to Oakwell if they could. But thankfully, they didn't get away. The opener from Ketsbaya on about a quarter of an hour was fantastic, mate. There's a 1-2 in that build-up involving Lee and Batty, and Batty threads the ball through Ketsbaya, and he does the defender with the look. He looks one way and passes the ball the opposite. And again, you know, when we're doing research and you look at the games and try and jog your memory a bit, something I missed on the day is it reflects on Batty's got this reputation of being just a ball winner and a bit of a, you know, water carrier in the centre mid. But actually, that lad would play football and he knew what he was doing with the football. And if you look at that goal, the ball he plays to put Ketsbaya in on goal, he just does the defender with a look. It's not pace, it's not skill, it's not, you know, definitely nutmegging him and what have you. It just, he looks one way, passes it totally the opposite, the defender's dead, and Ketsbaya finished it beautifully. Then on 27 minutes, we've got the second, which you think should have wrapped it up. Great ball from Rob Lee, opened up their back three. Kenneth Anderson, there's a name to conjure with. Came through and did what he did best, hit the keeper. But thankfully, Gary Speed was on hand to slot it home past the keeper once he'd done his best to miss the chance. 2-0, and you think we'd cruise. But then I think we got dragged into their niggles and their little spiky, horrible tackles. And we started to exchange a few with them, and that was when the yellow cards started to mount up for both sides. I think we actually ended up with 5 yellows and then 4 and a red in the end. It was just, like I say, not a horrible game or a brutal game or a battle. It was just niggly. The changing point, though, and again, we talk about things that Newcastle seem to do repeatedly. And on 57 minutes, they brought on Georgie Christoph, the Bulgarian striker, and they changed their formation, and we just didn't react to it. And within 60 seconds, we were back to 2-1. I think it was an exchange between Little and Sheridan, and Sheridan did this wonderful dummy that left Liddell in a relatively easy finish. But, you know, it should have been so much easier than that. But we'd been dragged into a kicking match by then. But the game changed for good. And about 75 minutes, A.D. Moses, the defender, he'd already had a little hack at Shearer about a quarter of an hour before, and then got his second yellow on 76 minutes. And that pretty much just sealed the game up. We were then in this comfort zone, just racking up the passes, and they couldn't get hold of the ball. But then Batty wrapped it up on 90 minutes after a great ball by Bob Lee, put him into the left-hand corner of the box, and he finished it with his left foot. And again, something else about Batty, he played that beautiful pass with his right foot and finished that goal with his left foot. So much more to David Batty than people realise. And that was the game. If you want to look about what David Batty's about, because that was the game, he did everything. He had a little bit of the kick, he had a little bit of battle. He set up a wonderful goal, and he scored a good goal for himself as well. And that set him up for the semi-final, which I think we've already talked about on the show, that particular semi. But, you know, to get a home draw against Barnsley at that stage was a gift. But to be fair to Barnsley, they came with a plan, and it nearly worked for them. Because it was just the weirdest game. You couldn't say it was a dirty game. You couldn't say it was a battle and everybody left with broken noses and things like that. It's just horrible.
Yeah, good stuff, mate. Okay, Stu, on to you.
Well, unlike Mitch, I'm not going to talk about semis. I'm going to talk about the next game. The first game I talked about was on the 13th of December, 1992. The next game was the 12th of December 2009. So now you're on 17 years to the day difference. And typically at Castle, not much has changed, but everything had changed. Once again, we're in the second tier of the league. Once again, we're top of the league and we're coasting ourselves to promotion. Once again, we've got a team that's too good enough for that league. So that's what hadn't changed. What had changed is the first time round under Keegan and Sir John Hall, etc. There was a belief, there was, I think, a knowingness that we were going to go on to greater things. Yet the next time round with Chris Hewton, etc., and the squad that we had, we knew we were too good enough for that league, but we knew we had an owner that wasn't going to invest in us sufficient enough for us to challenge like we did last time. So it was like one of those, like, enjoy this tour of the championship, you know, where you're winning and you've got the feel-good factor and you're seeing grounds that some people hadn't seen before. And what sticks to mind, the reason I chose this game is I was living in Tenerife at the time, and I used to fly back about 5 or 6 times a season for games, and I preferred the away games. But this one, again, just before Christmas, the way I used to do it was come back for 2 weeks, have first week in Newcastle, the second week with the ex-wife, who wasn't the ex-wife at the time, I suppose, but with her family, then fly back to Tenerife for New Year. So my daughter was 12, and I thought she was old enough now for me to take her to her first away game. So thankfully, the heat decided or offered to drive us down there. And as I said, I've got this fear of this big grass verge behind the way end. So we're parked at the city centre, had a little wander around. And Barnsley city centre is very, very similar to Preston, which I know is in Lancashire. But the way it's set out and everything else, you know, if you weren't familiar with them, you would think they were like pretty much identical. But by the by, we're getting into the ground. And again, we have 6,000-7,000, probably more actually in the home ends, because not just did we have the away end, we had half the stuff what was the main stand, which is opposite the new stand I referred to earlier, where the teams come out of. So we had the bottom row of that as well. So there was a huge away following again just before Christmas. The team's playing really, really well. And what sticks in my mind is they say my daughter, just 12 years old. And so as a father, you know yourself with girls that you have to be extra protective. You're covering them. But once we got inside the ground, we all know for being to the games, you all become one. You know, but we're all there for one common purpose only, and that's to support the 11 players with stripes on the pitch. And you, their duty is to do their best. Our duty is to give our best. And the way of the games were absolutely brilliant. The atmosphere was bouncing. But one song reverberated for what felt like an eternity. And it was probably about 20 minutes from just before kickoff, right? Well, I would say up to 20-minute mark. And that was, I won't finish the song, but it started off with "Get out of our club, get out of our club." So that was getting sung. Now, this is at the time when Mr. Ashley was very keen to prove himself, but he, by the fact that we'd got relegated and what happened afterwards and everything else, we knew that he wasn't going to be what we wanted him to be. I suppose not what he wanted to be either. But to his credit, he still went to some games, and this is one of the games he chose to take in. So this song was going on. You can see it was much to his discomfort because there was away fans sitting because they had half of that side of the pitch. You know, it was like if it was Newcastle, like the paddock side up until the dugouts. And you could see, you could visibly see him, and he kept squirming in his chair, and he was moving left and right and looking around, pretending that he couldn't hear what was going on. But what made it more comical was two rows behind him was the suspended Joey Barton. And I've got to be careful, I say this, pissing himself laughing. You know, and he kept looking over, smirking, and sorry for the language, but he loved the fact that he was getting, that the chairman was getting this abuse. So it was really, really funny just to watch that. So the game itself, Kevin Nolan put us ahead. The ball got lobbed forward to him, and again with his wrong foot, with his left foot, it was like a deft chip from the edge of the, just inside the box, if I remember right. It was he chipped it, and it seemed to take a long time to get in the goal, but it was only going one way. There was no one near it, and eventually got there in eruption. And then, not dissimilar to the first game I talked about, we conceded a goal through generous defending. This chip come over, and seems to be like, you get it, you clear it. No, after you, sir. And then someone from Bodge just come in and rifle it in the roof of the net. But again, we're top of the league. We've had a belief that we were going to win. And Andy Carroll put in probably one of his best leaps to create a goal. I know he scored many with his head scoring goals, but he jumped and he was hanging in the air, it seemed like, for about 3 seconds. And he knocks the ball through to hardly the prolific Marlon Harewood, who again just lobbed the ball over the keeper really, really cutely. And that was in front of us, and we went crazy. Everyone celebrating, and then we conceded a goal late on. End up 2-2, doesn't matter. I haven't broke my wrist. I didn't have to run down a bank. We're heading back up to Newcastle. Everyone's in good moods. I think we're about 8 points clear at that time or something. So in the car on the way back, and I wish I could be more visual with this. I'm sitting in the front with the heat, and the heat's driving, so obviously I'm looking this way. And I've turned around and said to my daughter, I says, so what's your favourite song then? Fully believing or thinking she's going to say the Mike Ashley song, which I told the fans were singing, "Get out of our club, you are a chancer." And that's what I'd convinced my 12-year-old that everyone was saying. This is clearly not deaf, but you know, I was trying my best to convince her that's what's being said. So I thought she was going to tell me this was her favourite song. And she says, "Well, the best song I like is the one that Gary, who's the head, told me the words to when you were getting the drinks." I went, "What song's that?" And she went, "You know the Colaccini song?" And she starts singing it. So I was having a bit of a meltdown. So I've looked at the heat and he's driving, his eyes just like come like saucers, and he just looks straight ahead. You know, and he's like, "I can't believe you've crashed this up to your dad." I was like, "What are you doing teaching a 12-year-old girl songs like that?" And he was just laughing anyway. So when we talked about in the chat that we were going to mention Barnsley, these were the first two games that sprung to mind. But as I said, it was good times. We got promoted. Won most games that season. Well, we won a lot more than we lost. We're heading back up home, and we're top of the league for Christmas again. So happy days indeed.
Great stuff, great memories, guys, as always, and thanks for sharing them with me and the viewers. I just want to get a quick plug in for the talking that I'm doing with Liam Kennedy, which will be at Bobics in Jesmond, which is the old Punch Bowl, Thursday the 5th of August, and that is a 7:30 start. And tickets are available from www.bobics.com. Ticket prices at £10, with all proceeds going to Newcastle's West End Food Bank. I'll be there, Liam, of course, Steve Hastie, and I'm sure there'll be a few other faces from NUFC Matters who will be making that journey across. So I'll unmute the lads because there's a little bit of noise coming from fans and all sorts out in the Middle East. But here we go with the celebrity Barnsley fans. As I said at the top of the programme, there's not many, but in no particular order, here we go.
Ian Kelsey,
of course, the actor who appeared in Coronation Street and in Emmerdale.
Dickie Bird,
God bless him, was a big Barnsley fan. Michael Parkinson, and last,
Darren Goff.
So that completes this list. On to the players.
George Rubino, yes.
Steve Wraith. It's like looking like you did someone's name.
Not Steve Wraith.
Oh, that's a good one, that.
It's not the other Rob Leader, is it?
No.
No. I've chucked this one in to fool you guys, because he obviously looked a lot different when he played for Newcastle.
Is it Stuart Barraclough?
It's not Stuart Barraclough. He played in goal for Newcastle.
Tony Keogh.
It's not Tony Keogh. It's Chris Hedworth.
Of course, playing in goal for Newcastle. Is that John Henry?
No. Looks like Herman Munster.
It's a good one.
I thought you would have got this, to be honest. Bit later than John Henry.
It's not Matt Ritchie's.
No, not Matt Ritchie.
Appleby. No, that's not.
Not Appleby either.
Oh, Mark Robinson.
Mark Robinson, well done.
Robinson, yeah.
Any ideas?
No. I was going to say Ian Rush to start with, but clearly not.
Very like Ian Rush, but not Ian Rush, no. Okay, not the hurriest lad.
No.
Joe Joyce.
All right.
Coach at Newcastle.
Ian Redfern.
Redfern, correct?
Yeah. Pat Howard.
That's Barraclough.
Pat Howard.
That's John Henry.
That's John Henry.
Agnew.
That's Agnew.
Steve Agnew with a bit of hair.
Again, that looks like Richie, doesn't it? But it's not.
Yeah, it does look like Richie. It's not.
I'll just guess Appleby again, but it's not.
It's not Appleby.
But this is where we need Steve Hastie. He'll get this.
Aye.
That is John Beresford.
Never.
No way.
Never.
John Beresford, yeah. You can see when you look at it clear, when you look at it a bit closer, you can probably see it, but yeah, John Beresford. Third time looking to you.
Applebee.
That's Applebee.
Marlon
Harewood. And Marlon Harewood completes the players tonight, so I might not have got past the lads and the celebrities, but I did with a couple of the players. Okay, have we got a 1 to 11, lads? George?
Yeah. Just yeah, right. 1 to 11. Tony Keogh is the goalkeeper. John Beresford, Peter Ramage. 4 is Matt Appleby. 5 Pat Howard. 6 Ted Robledo. 7 Stuart Barraclough. 8 Michael Chopra. 9 I decided to go with Adam Armstrong. 10 George Robledo. And 11 Ivan Toomey.
Okay, great stuff. Steve?
Well, a bit of a struggle because it was ages to find a goalie. Then I found Tony Keogh, who never played for us, but he did play a couple of times for Barnsley on loan. Back 4, Peter Ramage, Pat Howard, Chris Hedworth, John Beresford. Midfield, I had Stu Barraclough, John Hendry, and so that's what 4-2. And then I had I put the other Robledo. Is it Ed Robledo, who I think was midfield player?
Ted.
Then up front, I put Barry Thomas, who scored in the first game I ever went to. Going back to the theme of George at the beginning. Ivan Toney and George Robledo. And okay. I put manager. Can I see the manager?
Jim Iley.
Never managed us, but he was the nearest. I wouldn't want to pick Agnew for manager.
Okay, well, good stuff.
I chose Redfern as manager. Sorry, I didn't give you the manager. Was Redfern. Yeah.
Okay, Mitch.
Again, keeper. Back 4, Ramage, Beresford, Howard and Hedworth. Midfielder, Barraclough, Matty Appleby and Ted Robledo. George Robledo, Tony Cunningham and Ivan Toney up front. And again, I had Jim Ailey as manager.
Okay, great stuff. And Stu?
Well, pretty much similar. Tony Keogh in goal, Ramage and Bez as full-backs. Pat Howard and Chris Hedworth as centre-halves. Two in midfield, I had Barraclough and Matty Appleby. I had to get them in eventually. Then front 4 was John Hendry, George Robledo, Marlon Harewood, and because I did the dream team with the best teams, and then I put a Scottish team out, and then I've been asked to do an Irish one, I thought I'd better put someone in who would clearly make the worst one, and I put Tony Cunningham in up front as well, because he never gets mentioned. So, bless Tony Cunningham, he was the number 9. I hadn't heard of Jim Ailey, so I put Redfern as the manager.
Great stuff, great show as always, lads. Fantastic memories, some great stories, and big thanks for joining us. Don't forget, Bert and I will be in away Friday the 30th of July. Shambles Travels is now taking bookings 07791 41779. Just speak to Amanda and she can book you a place on the bus. I'm back tomorrow night with Super Mac and with Gibbo. Look forward to catching up with the Retro Lads again soon. Take care, lads.
Cheers.
Bye, boy.
Head back with the critics attack. It feels like I've been talking to myself again, but it's the only way you're